must almost be a relief for hockey fans in Minneapolis. Norm Green is moving the Minnesota North Stars to Dallas.
Touchdown! No! No! The Cardinals have knocked the Vikings out of the playoffs! What you
wanna say? Club in fair territory and then lands fair. Wow.
So a huge break for the Yankees. Joe Mauer should be at second base.
With the sixth pick in the 2009 NBA draft, the Minnesota Timberwolves select Johnny Flynn from
Yards left hash. Snap good. Spot down. Wolch's kick is up. And it is no good. He missed it. Are you kidding me? The season can't end like that.
It's nice that you have a sense of humor about it, Mike.
Oh, my gosh. Every time I hear that last one, I think of Kelly, my now ex, and what she said to me right before the kick. We're going to win. We're going to win. I go, why did you say that? I was like, wham. Wide left.
Doesn't she know what it is to be a Minnesota sports fan?
She does, and that's what's so shocking. But that's why we have a podcast, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, they do get your hopes up, don't they?
They do, and then they rip your heart out, and they show it to you beating right before you cack. Sorry.
It's okay. Welcome
Hi, JP.
Back.
How are you today?
You're not going to dox me? Yeah, I'm good, G. JB McGillicuddy's good, or the person playing him is doing pretty well. Welcome everybody. You made it. It's episode 3, Misery Loves Company podcast. You know, originally, Mike, we were going to do a 3-part series on Fran Tarkington.
Yes.
In the 70s Vikings.
Yes.
But after doing my research, we're now doing a 4-part series because the term, little tease for next week, a term that was made up by a bad beat against your beloved Minnesota Vikings is Hail Mary. That term came from destroying the fantasies and dreams of residents all over this great state. So we have to do a separate episode just on that.
Just on that. Yeah, fair enough. And I think we kind of teased it a little bit last week when I shared my little quick story. I could tell you exactly where I was when that happened.
Yeah, save it for next week.
I will do that.
Yeah. Little housekeeping up front. Last week I forgot to ask for guests. I'll do this podcast with just you, Mike, the whole time, but I think it would be interesting. I think it would be interesting to find some other perspectives, some other stories, some other rituals. Like at your house, Mike, the ritual is your dad throws something and you cry yourself to sleep. There may be other interesting rituals. Plus, I've always wanted to know, like, if you're listening out there, and you dress up like a Viking on Sundays, and then you're like an accountant Monday through Friday, I want to talk to you.
Yeah.
I got a lot of questions.
There's a lot of them here, and I would imagine nationwide, but Vikings Nation, there's some guys that are diehard, paint their face purple, and then Monday they're litigators or, like you said, CPAs. What I'd like, JP,
yes,
is a little estrogen on the show at some point.
Wouldn't we all?
Well, not for that reason, but you know, I wouldn't say no. Kidding, of course.
Let's
but
try
no,
not to creep out of it.
Yeah, no. But no, it would be good because there are some diehard female fans here in Minnesota. I know several of them. Hopefully they have some compelling stories and can share the misery. That
you know what they say, hell hath no fury. Like a woman scorned by sports.
Well, yes, I didn't.
Or,
I don't remember
I don't know
that
if that's
last
exactly
part,
how it goes, but it's something like that.
Yeah, it sounds accurate.
So we need guests, Mike. This is going to be news to you. Did you know that we have an official Misery Loves Company email address?
I did not.
Okay,
know that.
Here's what it is.
We're somebody.
Misery Loves Company, MN, as in Minnesota, at gmail.com. Here's the thing: just Misery Loves Company was taken. Misery Loves Company Pod was taken. So we're Misery Loves Company, MN, at gmail.com. You know, just send a little email saying what your angle is, how long you've been a sports fan. Right now, I'll remind everybody, we're going chronological through Mike's life. sport by sport. So clearly we're in the middle of football. This is, you know, this is going to take a while. So
yeah,
please email, but we're going to do basketball, hockey, and baseball as well. We're going to finish with baseball because, you know, you did win 87-91, and I can share too, because the person playing, JP McGillicuddy, can share because that person was a big Kirby Puckett fan.
How could you not be?
Yeah.
That guy.
You pretty know, lovable. He's like a puppy or something.
You know, the game six when he, I don't know if you knew this or not, but he said, get on my back, fellas.
Oh, that's cool.
And he, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Good guy.
Indeed.
Or maybe not a good guy is what I hear, but well, a good player and charismatic. And
R&P, Kirby. R.I.P., right. I should say.
Second thing before we get to the misery. Yeah. On Saturday, I got a phone call at Misery Studios, but Misery Studios were performing its other function, my business. And a gentleman was needing a place to play. So he showed up. And as you know, it was there was some real Florida shit going on outside at Saturday. It was 94 and humid. I couldn't keep my – I'm such a fucking nerd. Like, I can't keep my glasses unfogged. It was very, very dangerous.
Very Minnesota.
My glasses were fogging up just going outside. Anyway, they came by. These fellows were such nice. I shudder to call them – or I hesitate to call them kids as they were, you know, over 21, but – they came through here. They were from Iowa. They go to Iowa State. And we had just a great chat and everything. And I asked them, you know, I went to go work out. I left them here. And I said, hey, you know, I live off these Google reviews. Google owns the world. You know, we're just renting space here. Google determines your fate. And he's like, yeah, well, no problem. We'll write reviews. And I get that all the time. It's probably like a 30, maybe like 1 in 3. Well, every single person in the group, every single person from their fraternity, which I got to shout that out. Nice job, Beta Chi. Thank you so much. You guys, it really touched me. It well, you know, I told them, you know, my story that I left this corporate job and I'm trying to do something here and try to be a little bit more free and do something that I don't have to feel guilty about. And they understood and they came through with helping me. So I just want to say,
welcome to the resistance.
Fuck yes.
Welcome to the resistance, boys.
Very nice.
Thank you. And also, I want to announce that I'd like to adopt Iowa State, the Cyclones, this season. So we're going to be doing this pod the entire season. And I think it'd be a fun segment just to check in, you know, adopt this Midwest team. They're not playing the Gophers, unfortunately, because that could be fun. And maybe even roll down there and go to a game. I don't know. I'll have to talk to my guy, Kale, and see what's what.
Yeah.
See if he wants to, like, do some sort of, like, remember the movie Old School just for one weekend? I'll do, a, like, a Frank the Tank thing, you know, do a couple keg stands.
No, that would be great. Are they going to be tuning in?
I think they'll tune in for the shout-out. And, you know, while we're shouting people out, and you know there's no free ads unless you're the Lookout or Tobacco Grove, there's no free ads here. Mm-hmm. But those weren't free because those businesses are good to us, and they're independent businesses, mm-hmm. right, Mike?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They've let me put my stuff up in their place. So really that isn't free. We're just helping each other out. And Someone that helped us out was actually a couple people, friends of mine, Brenna, Brenses, and Bri. They took some time out of their day to post the pod a few places online. So I just wanted to let them know that we're working. We got to talk to Misery Corporate, but we're working on getting them a title in name only. There's no pay associated with it, but associated producers for these guys. What do you think, Mike? Can we make that happen? We got to talk to the suits, but
we're going to make them an offer they can't refuse. I'm kidding.
Oh, that's so appropriate because we're 1974. Do you know? Wait, I think I have one other housekeeping thing to do, but Godfather 2 was released.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. Okay, yeah, no, I'm good.
All right.
All right, let's go back. That was the housekeeping portion of our show. Let's go back to what was going on in 1974. Albums, Mike. Do you have what was going on with you? What grade were you in? I think you were 11 or 10.
Yeah, I was 11 and a half when, well, I take that back. But anyways, just a little over 11 when that Super Bowl took place. I don't know if we want to get into this now, but I had a couple life-altering things that happened to me that year.
We got to set the scene. I want to know what kind of mood, what your life was like. I got to understand this shit.
Yeah, I played hockey. I played baseball. very passionate about any sport, but those were the two main sports I was playing at that point in my life.
Yes.
Starting to get a little sparring in. In my neighborhood, street fighting was not uncommon. So anyway, so that's pretty much what was going on.
Was your interest in boxing like sort of a practical matter?
Well, you had no choice. You learn how to fight, you learn how to run, and you learn when to do both or one or the other. So shout out to Railroad Island in St. Paul. But I don't know if I shared this in previous podcasts, but you could not get into my neighborhood without crossing a railroad track. So they called it Railroad Island, which was 90% Italian and a couple other one-offs. But yeah, love that neighborhood. It's not the same anymore. That neighborhood's long gone. Yeah. But there's some fabulous restaurants in Railroad Island that are still there.
Go take a look, everybody.
Yeah.
You're talking about Italian food?
Italian food. Freddie Urusso. So
maybe we'll have to make a trip down there.
Yeah, I'll bring you with me. My dad's on the wall.
Oh,
the
no
wall.
Kidding. I'd like to see that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What was going on in music in 1974? I noticed something fairly disturbing, and let's just get through the list here. Number one album, 1974, Elton John, Greatest Hits. Number two, Santana, Greatest Hits.
Crosby, the Greatest Hits.
I have a theory coming.
Okay.
Crosby, Stills, and Nash, the record's called So Far. That was three. Bad Company, self-titled. Four, Neil Diamond, Greatest Hits. Best of Grateful Dead. Bachman, Turner, Overdrive, Not Fragile. What's their big hit, Mike?
Let It Ride.
It might be. I was thinking of Taking Care of Business.
Taking Care of Business, yeah.
What
yep,
a
that's a
fucking terrible song. John Denver, Back Home Again.
Oh.
Aerosmith, Get Your Wings, and then... Beach like Boys, that. Endless Summer. Now, I'm not as inspired, in fact, by this list. I had a little bit of a hard time for my music corner at the end of the show picking the exact song. And I do have a theory. You know, Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. Young had that song, Needle and the Damage Done, right?
Okay.
You ever heard that song?
Nope.
You never heard it?
Maybe I've heard it. I don't know the
Needle
name.
Needle and the Damage Done?
No.
Oh, I'll show you offline. It's just about what was fairly obvious. Janis Joplin.
Okay.
Gone or Going. Jimi Hendrix, Gone. Doors, Jim Morrison. John had Yoko. Think of all the bands. Like, I don't know what was going on with Led Zeppelin. I'm just saying, like, all those years of the late 60s of drugging and drinking, like the, it's coming, you know, it's making it so they can't do their jobs. You know, there's not as many good records. There's a bunch of greatest hits records. And what happens when you make space for something? Mike, did you ever have that person in your life during the pandemic or maybe before that used too much hand sanitizer?
Yeah.
You did? Did they?
Yeah. I try to distance myself from those.
Okay. People. Well, you should, because eventually what happens is, you know how it says, that Purell says like 99.6, right? That leaves... 4 out of every 1,000 microbes that are just like partying, even though you're using that. So what happens is people use this stuff and they clean their hands and they make real estate for that 0.4% that can survive under those conditions. And it's usually fungus, and then they get warts. So I know you're making a lot of faces. Follow me with this analogy.
Okay.
Okay. If guys aren't making music because they're taxed to the nth degree by drugs, they're making real estate. And in this analogy, the Purell is the drugs, and the fungus is disco. Disco's coming, because if you make room, if you leave an open opportunity, something's going to fill that space. So that's my theory as to why there aren't as many good records.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to run with that, because I have nothing to respond with at all, other than I did not like disco. At all. I'm a classic rock guy, as you know. And so, but I do notice a trend here. The last week, Super Bowl VIII.
Yes.
Greatest hits, greatest hits, greatest hits. And
but
now,
69, when everyone was peak, drugs haven't taken us down yet. Like all these bands, Jerry from Grateful Dead, Heroin Junkie, even John Denver was an alcoholic. Like, these things take a toll. The chickens come home to roost, and nobody's making any good shit. So then they're just like, we'll put disco on the radio. Yeah. And then now we got tons of disco.
Right, right. Other than Aerosmith, that album I did like.
Yeah.
I did like that album.
But don't you worry, Mike, because with disco, with every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. In this case, it's punk rock. So
there you go.
Don't
the
you
Ramones.
Fret. All right, top grossing films of 1974.
Godfather. No?
It's on there.
Oh.
Blazing Saddles.
Ah, classic. Love Blazing Saddles.
Towering Inferno, which was like the first action.
Yes, saw that in the theater.
Super cast, right?
Saw that in the theater.
Uncle Juice. Oh, I had one other note at the top of this show. If you bet the under, Vegas set the line at 2.5 shows. If you bet the under on how long it would take us to mention Milton Berle, cash that ticket. You won. It took two shows before we got into Milton Berle.
Milton Berle.
Okay. Two, Towering Inferno. Three, The Trial of Billy Jack.
Oh, another good one. Yeah, saw that one in the theater.
Young
as well.
Frankenstein.
Oh, my gosh.
Mel Brooks is killing it. He's got two of the top four movies.
Yes.
Earthquake, which is much like Towering Inferno, right? It's just kind of a disaster
decent.
Movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not great, but I mean, in my opinion.
And then this is on my very short list for best films of all time. Coming in at number six, Godfather Part Two.
Mm-hmm. Sequels generally don't do well, and that was, in my opinion, equally as good.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. I got a little drop that has to do with, just listen to this and then.
Truth be told, I really have only one commandment. Sundays are my day. That means no prayers, no calls, faxes, no nothing. Jump to January 13, 1974. I'm in the beach house on Contempo Drive in my jacuzzi taking a schwitz. Suddenly, I feel an old pain in the back of my neck. Oh, man, someone's praying. Hey, God, it's me. I recognize the voice instantly. It's Terry Bradshaw, Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback, four-time world champ and future Hall of Famer. It's the Super Bowl. We're down 6 points. You got to help me make this pass. Boom, I go shithouse on him. I don't got to do anything, Terry. You are one pussy hair away from eternal hellfire, my friend.
Okay, let's explain some I need to explain that clip. That would be Bob Odenkirk, better known as Saul Goodman. Are you familiar?
Is he Minnesota
Breaking
guy?
Bad?
Oh, okay.
Saul Goodman, comedian?
Yeah.
Yep. Bob Odenkirk?
I have not seen Breaking Bad.
Oh, well you should probably get on that.
No, that's what my son tells me.
Okay, so he's doing, in that bit, he's God, but he's God for a very specific reason. He's imitating this guy, Bob Evans. Have you heard of him? Legend, you know, this is old timey Hollywood
restaurant,
corner.
Bob Evans?
No.
Okay. All right. No, then I am not.
About that place. Bob Evans is like one of these old timey, like in the 70s producers. He ran Paramount Pictures and he really talks like that. And he has this audio book called The Kid Stays in the Picture about like old time. I mean, he's dated like Ally McGraw and like all these old timey stories. He was the producer on Godfather. He was. You know, he ran around with Jack Nicholson. There's lots of good stories. Mm-hmm. And the reason why they make him God is because he has one of the craziest egos ever. So that's Odenkirk doing Bob Evans, who was the producer on Godfather 2. And he mentions Terry Bradshaw in probably the Super Bowl we're about to talk to. So I feel like that was a one-stop shopping clip.
Well, it was rather a great segue, lengthy segue, but great segue into Terry Bradshaw.
All right, back to the list. Another disaster movie. They're hot. That's what Hollywood does. Something works once and they
redo it over and over and over.
Exactly. They press it so thin. Airport 1975. You see that one?
I did.
Okay. How was it? I've never seen it.
It was all right. I mean, this is all personal preference, right? So everyone, you know, like kind of pizza deal. Like, you know, it's for me, it was okay.
Okay. Life and Times of Grizzly Adams, checking in at number eight.
Yeah, like that one.
I bet you like this one, The Longest Yard.
Loved The Longest Yard.
Big Burt Reynolds guy?
I did not like the remake.
Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
no thanks.
I'm a purist, and Burt Reynolds, fabulous movie. And Bernadette Peters, you can't go wrong.
Burt, pure Burt. I just want pure Burt.
Pure Burt.
Okay. And then coming in at number 10, Murder on the Orient Express.
Did not see that one. So one of the. So I've seen 9 of the 10.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either. All right, just some quick events that I thought were interesting. Big Dick, Richard Nixon.
Well, I'm not a crook. I've earned everything I've got.
He
lied.
He's not. He got it. He's looking for a new job at this point, and he takes refuge where on the West Coast, Mike?
California.
True. That's a correct answer. Specifically, where? A couple other people are from there, that you know. And quarterbacks are from there.
Oh,
one at least. San Clemente.
San Clemente. Okay.
White House West.
Ah, I did not know that. So your hometown.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. That's what we're known for. Big Dick.
How proud you must be.
Yes. Fucking nice house. Right by the ocean. Yeah.
Of course.
All right. Ford says, come on back, y'all. Just kidding. We're not having a war. So the draft dodgers were allowed to come back. And here's one that you'll like. 1974, one of the greatest fights of all time. One of the biggest preambles to a fight. Rumble in the Jungle.
Oh, Ali and Foreman?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I wanted to suggest to you, if you haven't seen it already, if you haven't seen When We Are Kings documentary about that whole event, it's incredible. Early Don King. I forget the band that played. It's worth watching.
I've heard that from multiple people, and I just have to sit down and do it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, make that one a priority. Breaking Bad, When We Were Kings. Those are legit.
Yeah.
Hank tops the Babe.
Huh?
Hank. Aaron.
Oh. That was that year?
Yes.
I oddly enough, was watching that on TV when that happened.
Yeah. You see, remember that guy runs out to, like, shortstop?
Yes.
I would be nervous if I were him. He was getting some very unkind letters. Turns out racism was a thing in the 70s. All right, this one's not great for me. NC State defeats UCLA, ending their 7-year run.
Basketball?
Championships in basketball, yes.
Yeah. John Wooden. Yeah.
I was trying to think of a Wooden.
A Woodenism? Say that 3 times fast.
I just know that he taught them how to tie their shoes correctly.
Starting with the basics, right?
Yeah.
Get the fundamentals
Everybody
down.
Does everything the same. And you know who that reminds me of? My buddy Bud.
Oh. Yeah.
This didn't go well. It's hard to imagine why. 10-cent beer night in Cleveland? There was a fucking riot?
No. That just sounds... That's a formula for disaster.
I'm thinking about having a 75-cent beer night here.
Why not?
Yeah. And then, hey, nerds, I know you're listening. D&D came out in 1974.
D&D?
Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, okay. Well, you can tell I'm not a nerd.
Sure, you're not a nerd. Yeah. Just kidding. All right, well, that concludes just setting up. I might have to edit
a little recap of 1974.
So the regular season. Do you remember anything about the regular season, Mike?
I do. I couldn't tell you the record, but I know that
I can. 10-4.
10-4. Okay, so a little slight regression from the previous year. I know our D kept. You know, the Purple People Eaters and our defense. Oh, man. Chills every time I hear this. They didn't do this back then, just so you know. We had the Skol Viking song. You need to find that one.
Okay.
We had, I almost said George Foreman, Chuck Foreman as our dual purpose running back.
And fantasy god.
If memory serves, in college he was a receiver.
I have his stats.
And they converted him to a running back.
Foreman, so he had 199 attempts for 777. Go to Vegas. 9 touchdowns, but here's the good part. 53 catches, 586, 6 touchdowns. So he had totaled out at 15 touchdowns in 14 games. I mean, he's a fantasy god.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was... Yeah, he was a stud, and I think that was his second year.
Yeah,
okay.
I think so.
Yeah,
because last year I was talking about him being the unanimous rookie of the year, correct?
Oh, that's right. Yep, I forgot about that. Yep. Yeah. So absolutely. So we had Sir Francis, my idol, and we had John Gilliam, and we had was Stu Voigt our tight end, and we had of course Chuck Foreman.
Chuck Foreman. And who was the other running backs that never played?
It was Dave Osborne and my paisan, Ed Marinaro.
He doesn't come up in the research too often.
No, he really doesn't. He had a much better acting career than he did.
Well, good for him.
Yeah.
He's probably, you know, he avoided that. All that brain damage. God, man.
Yeah.
CTE. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes when I watch football and I see like two out there posturing and some kind of brain injury, it's just rough. It's a rough game. And they make them play 17 and then the playoffs. These guys really put it on the line.
They do, and that's why they get the big bucks.
They do get pretty good money. We'll come to money in a minute. I found some interesting stuff. So no discernible hangover for the Vikes as they go 10-4. Just around the league, the MVP was Kenny the Snake Stabler. Offensive player of the year, same guy. Defense in his second year, Mean Joe Green.
Okay.
Oh, wait, no, sorry. Rookie.
Oh,
he was a rookie.
Yeah.
Don Woods was the offensive rookie of the year.
Oh, Donnie Woods.
Jack Lambert, teammate. That's, I think, I don't know if Lambert was a rookie, but they had a, I have it in my notes, like they had a great rookie class that they, Steelers
both
did.
Of their receivers, Stallworth and Swan, were rookies that year.
Yeah, and I got some stuff about Minnesota they thought they were going to be able to draft Swan, and Pittsburgh grabbed him. Coach of the year, Don Coryell.
Oh, yeah.
All right. League leaders, Ken Anderson, Cincinnati Bengal, 2667. Rushing yards, Otis Anderson, 1407.
Oh, my goodness.
Bronco,
which isn't bad for
1407 in 14 games. It's 100
yards a game.
That's good.
Yeah.
Cliff Branch, 1092 receiving.
Raiders.
And scoring leader Chester Markle. I bet he's a kicker. 94.2 cares. All right. Fran had a. I don't know. These stats look very pedestrian to me. Maybe you can fill me in, put some context to these numbers. 199 out of 351 attempts. He passed for 2,600 yards, roughly. Yeah. 17 touchdowns, 12 picks. Very, very David Carr. Very Trent Dilfer.
Yeah.
You know, he has another thing in common with Trent. They both got kicked out of a game.
Correct. Yeah. No, you know, not to be a Fran defender, but some of those picks were not his fault.
I'm sure.
The one in the Super Bowl that haunts me to this day, but we'll get into the Super Bowl right before halftime. John Gilliam. I mean, he would have caught it if it wouldn't have hit him in the hands. Anyway.
Fran hit him in a bad spot.
right in the midst. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There's always context. I mean, the bottom line is he got him there. What they did once they were there, I'll ask you. How many points do you think they scored in all four Super Bowls combined?
Oh, boy. Let's see. They got six there because they missed an extra point. I'm going to say less than 30.
It's exactly 30.
Wow.
For four games. So I was going to do some research and see if I could find any animosity on, you know, sometimes teams, the offense hates the defense and vice versa. Maybe.
Yeah.
No, I stopped looking because I couldn't find anything. There was a lot of accountability. We'll get to it. But next year was their best team, according to Coach Bud. So how much fighting could there have been? I mean, I guess it's possible for the O and the D to hate each other and still do well, but I think they stayed together pretty well as a unit, and that goes back to Bud Grant, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agreed. Bud certainly instilled that culture, but for that era, their offense wasn't prolific. It wasn't, Eric Coryell, but it was balanced, and it was very much in tune with what was going on in the NFL back then.
Yeah.
And their D was their D. I mean, legendary Purple People Eaters. Other than Gary Larson was replaced by Dirt Winston.
Dirt?
Dirt was his nickname.
D-I-R-T.
Yeah, I don't remember his real name. He was number 60. But then Gary Larson would come in, because they rotate these guys in. But that was, I remember that vividly. Because not the Purple People Eaters are being
disowned.
Yeah.
I've seen twice on 169 over here a purple food truck, and it says the Purple People Feeders.
Lame.
Yeah.
sorry.
Just
if you're listening.
That nickname's gotten a lot of
juice.
You
suck.
Oh, jeez. Those were the words of Mike Colosimo.
Fight
me. You can find him on. Yeah, you don't want to do that. All right. So we're in the playoffs. What are these guys playing for? Of course they're playing for pride, but the divisional round players get 1/14th of their salary, which, as you know, was a big deal to these guys. And so that could range from like 2,000 to, for Fran, it was 10K. So Fran's making, if it's 1/14th, 10K times 14, he's making 140 a year. Grand. It's a good wage in 1975, but I mean, those owners were just pocketing so much money. If their star was making that much.
Right. A lot of them had to have second jobs in the offseason. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like Carl Eller, I think he was delivering beer.
Imagine that.
For a local distributor. And of course, you know, Alan Page was getting his law degree at that point. But anyway, certainly.
I love Alan Page. The more I read about him, he's just he was just a heady player, very, very sharp. Yeah. Something will come up here in a minute.
I think he was the first defensive player to win MVP, if memory serves.
He won MVP, and I think we went over that. I think he was the first. He was. Certainly the first defensive lineman to become a Supreme Court judge.
Yeah.
Or any NFL guy, to my knowledge. Okay, so they're playing for some dough. There's stuff at the line. People really give a shit. Although I don't think it's fair for the owners to take all of the money. There is something cool to, like, the players really playing for something. You know what I mean?
I long for those days.
So the NFC Championship, the winners get $8,500 flat. The losers get $5,500. And then the Super Bowl, winners get $15K. Losers get half that, $7,500. I'm not sure why it's a fraction of your salary in the first round, and then it just becomes uniform. But that's what I found out in my research. So Minnesota has the divisional round game against the Cardinals. Not the Arizona Cardinals.
No,
St. Louis Cardinals. Mm-hmm.
Hart?
Do you remember anything about that game, Mike?
A little bit. I remember, I think the QB was Hart. Jim Hart, I believe. But I don't remember the outcome. I mean, I remember the outcome, but I don't remember the score.
Minnesota 30, Cardinals 14. I got some quotes here. Our guy Foreman went 23 runs for 113 yards. Mm-hmm. Fran went 13 for 23, 169. Cards QB had a rough day against that.
Vaunted.
That's the word I was looking for. Thank you, Mike. The vaunted Minnesota Vikings defense. The purple gang, not the purple people eaters. They didn't like that.
I know.
All right. The Cards QB went 18 for 40 for 200 yards.
18 for 40?
Yeah.
Less than 50%.
It's less than 50%.
Yeah. Well, all right.
Yeah. Fran, after completing a 28-yard TD to Gilliam, that was your typical Johnny Unitas to Lenny Moore pass of 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. They keep saying you can't throw deep on against a zone, don't they? I put that quote in there to say, like, Fran's a nice guy. I know him from That's Incredible or whatever. Actually, I don't really know that much about him. He always just came off as a nice guy. I just really think this guy has some fuck you to him.
Yeah, and his dad was a preacher.
Son of a preacher.
So he might, you know, clean that up a little, but yeah.
they say you can't – he's just proven people wrong about the zone. It's funny, this is kind of what's going on today with this two-deep zone stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. That you can't throw, and yeah, I wonder how Fran would do. Okay, I got a quote here from the Cards running back, Terry Metcalf. Do you know this guy?
I do. Okay. He had his son, Eric Metcalf.
Oh, yeah, Cleveland Brown.
Yep.
He says, I felt we matched them in the first half at least, but those people came out in the second half and just broke their necks coming after us.
Wow.
I won't admit the better team won. Well, that's big of you, Terry. but a good team won. Thanks, Terry. Speaking about, I guess he had a fumble. He said, I had control of the ball, and then all of a sudden it squirted. That Alan Page hit me really hard. Like I said, Yeah, what do you mean by that? like I said, they came after us in the second half. So, little bit more research. I was able to get the archives from the Star Tribune, so that I pulled out little this or that.
A little factoid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the Wright brothers, is that a name you're familiar with, the DBs?
Nate Wright and Jeff Wright?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, one had a pick, the other had a fumble recovery.
Okay.
Nice game. They win. On to Well, the Rams. The Rams had a little chant going after they got by their divisional opponent. They're like, bring on Minnesota. They were really pumped up to play the Vikes. And they had reason to be confident. It sounds like they had a good club, and the Vikings just squeaked by 14-10.
Okay, was that Roman Gabriel again?
Yeah. No. It was. I should have wrote this down. I mean, their quarterback was. I only say it because it's back then. It was sort of unique. He was a black guy, and I forget his name. It wasn't Roman. I think Roman Gabriel had gone to the Eagles by now.
Okay.
Gotcha. So let's see. This is what I was talking about Alan Page just being, you know, not only physically impressive, but very thoughtful in his game. You know, just he saw somebody. Let's see, I'll write it. I wrote it down, so I might as well read it. Alan Page capitalized on some movement on the line at the goal line. The Rams were at the goal line, and so what does it say? Alan Page capitalized on some movement on the line at the goal line. Why, I didn't write this down very well.
Riveting podcast right now we're going through, folks.
Yeah. Don't break your back helping me out with the research.
Okay. Well,
I just wrote it down wrong. Anyway, what happened was Alan Page did something good. Can we just say that? I think he just forced the play. The quarterback rushed. It was tipped at the line. Mm-hmm. And do you remember a guy named Wally?
Hilgenberg.
Yeah.
Yep. I sure do.
We need more Wallys in the world.
Wally Hilgenberg, Jeff Seaman. Those were the two linebackers that come to mind for the Vikes, part of the Purple Gang or whatever.
Purple Gang.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a linebacker, I believe.
Yep, he sure was.
Yeah.
And a guy named Matt Blair, who was a rookie that year. And I got to golf with Matt a few times. I got to know him later in life. And he would tell me stories about what is totally illegal now, the head slap. The head slap was legal.
Yeah,
Deacon Jones? Yeah. So that was Matt's rookie year, so I think they'd rotate him in every now and then. But Matt Blair, RIP, great guy, phenomenal golfer. That's a story down the road. But, so I do remember Wally Hilgenberg quite well.
Yeah, well, he made a, you know, at the goal line, interception's a huge deal. At least, you know, they're at least getting three down there. So, and Alan Page, I just reread my notes. He just realized that they got into a pass formation. He sort of set everybody up. He's just a really intelligent player.
Yeah.
Does the name Fred Dreyer ring a bell?
Fred Dreyer does not.
Okay. Fred Dreyer was on a TV show called Hunter.
Oh, the Rams. Yeah. Fred Dreyer. Okay. Yeah, I do.
This quote comes from Fred. They've got good people. They are a championship team. They have Tarkington's play calling, Foreman's running, and the defense to make big plays. Yeah, I guess I'll root for them. They are good guys.
Fred Dreyer.
Yeah, there TV's Hunter.
Yes.
Gotta love that.
Oh, my goodness.
All right, so, yeah, they get by the Vikes. They get by the Rams, that is, with a score of 14-10. So, here we go again. Super Bowl IX, 112-75. Do you know the point spread? Who was the favorite?
The Vikes. I don't know the spread. Six, I'm going to guess.
Yeah, Steelers by three.
Oh, I was totally wrong. There's my research again.
Yeah, from here's where pretty impressive draft here. This is from SI, Paul Zimmerman. This might explain why they were favorites. It says, of course, what people didn't realize at the time was that those first-year players were the greatest rookie crop in history.
Mm-hmm.
Five of them. Lynn Swann, mm-hmm. John Stallworth, Jack Lambert was a rookie, Mike Webster, and Donnie Shell.
Oh, yeah.
That group eventually made 29 Pro Bowls.
Wow. Yeah, they were good.
Yeah, and they had that Steel Curtain, man.
Steel Curtain was phenomenal.
I got a little quote from Joe Green that I thought was sort of interesting and painted a picture of that Steel Curtain and that defense in general. I'm not mean, he said. I avoid violence. We got a lot meaner man on the team than me. Jack Lambert. He's so mean, he don't even like himself. It's a very 70s quote.
Yeah. Yeah. No, if they, you got to give them props. I mean, they, on both sides of the ball. But I remember when we'll get into the Super Bowl, just how Chuck Foreman could not get off. I think at halftime he had like 2 yards rushing or something like that.
But yeah. That came up in the literature a lot. That they just straight shut them down. There was a little Q&A with the QBs before the game got going that I found interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Question is...
The original TB?
The question is TB, Tom Brady?
Terry Bradshaw, the original TB.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah. Does Francis Tarkington's 14 years of experience give the Vikings an advantage at the QB position? So Fran and Terry answered this. I'll let you guess on what they think. It's pretty obvious. Fran says, I think it does. I don't think there's any questions about it. It does not assure us a victory. It just means the Vikings QB has many more situations to draw on in big money games. Okay?
Okay.
Here's Terry's answer. I don't think so at all. I've played in as many big games as Francis. The last two were big ones. And
sorry.
And we won with Terry Bradshaw as the QB. Do you ever talk about yourself in the third person?
Never.
That's good.
That's a Herschel Walker thing.
Or Ricky Henderson.
Ricky Henderson.
Maybe he got it from Terry Bradshaw.
Yeah, could be.
I think I'm as good a QB as Francis. Why does he keep on saying Francis like that? He's irritating me.
Yeah. Well, you've watched him on NFL Today,
yeah,
right?
He's a clown.
Yeah.
I think I'm as good a QB as Francis, and I think I can handle any situation as well as Francis. He says his name three times in two sentences. How is the Super Bowl game going to be won? They're asking for a prediction here. Fran says, there aren't going to be many points scored. The key will be which team could put together one long, maybe two, drives. It will establish supremacy, keep the ball away from the other offense, and set the tone. He happened to be right. Here's what Terry said. We got the best defense in football, and it will win the game for us. I don't look for the QPs to decide it, but I do think if Terry Bradshaw, third person, plays a good game, the Pittsburgh Steelers will win the game.
They were both right, but
Bradshaw, unfortunately, was more right.
Yeah, I don't think Bradshaw had a great game, if memory served. It was a
He didn't need to.
No, he did not.
Because Franco Harris.
Yep.
Do you remember him tearing off runs? Because he went 34 carries for 158, set a record.
Yeah, but most of it was in the second half. Well, not that it matters, but it kind of wore him down. And once again, the Vikings found a way to shoot themselves in the foot continuously. Because in the first half, I think that halftime score was like 2-0.
Yeah.
We gave up the first safety in the history of the Super Bowl.
So you got that going for you.
We got a lot of
Why are we even doing this fucking podcast? It's not that bad. You got all kinds of records.
Because I'm constantly thinking about performing Harry Carey.
Look that up, kids.
Yeah. No, do not. And don't do that. That was a bad joke. Once again, I sit down with my old man. This is our year, Pops.
Yep.
He said nothing. My dad was very stoic from that standpoint.
He knew. He knew.
And he's very superstitious, which is where I got it from. And and I'm like, this is our year, Pops. This is our year. And obviously it was not. But if you look at the first half, I'm sure it's on YouTube somewhere. We were in the game. It was rainy. It was in New Orleans, I think.
Yes. Okay. No, or getting confused. Yes, I believe it was. Last year was Houston.
Yeah, where is Tulane Stadium?
It's in Louisiana.
It is. Okay, maybe not New Orleans. But anyway.
I think so, New Orleans.
Okay. And I remember it being rainy, and I remember Chuck could not get off, and I remember people falling, slipping all the time. It was a sloppy game. I'm not making excuses. We lost. There's no way around it.
Yeah.
They didn't crush us, though. I mean, we had so many opportunities to win that game.
Mm-hmm.
But self-inflicted wound after self-inflicted wound. But I'm over it.
Bud supports your testimony here. He said there were three bad teams out there. Us, Pittsburgh, and the officials.
Oh,
he's got a few zingers, that Bud.
That's Bud, though.
Yeah.
Wow. And the officials. That's
pretty
good.
The more I research him, the more I like that.
I wonder if he got fined. Because you'd get fined, wouldn't you, nowadays?
Yeah, you still do. Yeah.
You still.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, maybe. So Dan Jenkins from SI remembers this. Here's what I'll always remember about the Vikings in that game. Excuse me. They were down 9-0 in the fourth quarter, and the running game had been stuffed as no team's runners ever had before.
No.
16 of the 20 runs they'd called had picked up 2 yards or less.
Yeah.
And now they were on the Steelers' 5-yard line. And what did their brain trust do?
Run it.
They sent in 2 tight ends and a goal line offense and tried to punch it in. You're frustrated right there. Yeah. Well, it was a different game back then. Although in my research, there were some quotes like, yeah, until recently, you could just get in your defense. And we just played that defense the whole time. Like, people are just now starting to audible line, starting to throw from the 1-yard line, starting to throw on 4th and 1. Like, they're just adding variation. I think the game was before Lombardi, we're going to do 8 things and we're going to do them better than you, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Right.
Well, that's not optimal, as you know.
No.
As history has dictated.
Absolutely. And that's kind of stubbornness on Jerry Burns, who was the
I got a quote from him.
Yeah. Well, was there a couple Effenheimers in there? Because guy was – he eventually became the Vikings coach, and he was a great soundbite. Anyway, so here's what I remember of the game. We had – every time Fran rolled out, good things most of the time would happen.
Yeah.
Why did they not roll him out more? And I know that wasn't a hugely prevalent play back then, but he was a scrambler. And
people are scared of what they don't understand.
Yeah. So frustrating. I remember in the first half, Foreman gets a 4-yard carry, which is not bad, right? It was the only 4-yard carry of the half. Every other play, either at the line, 1 yard, or stuffed.
Well, he did something a little different on this play. I guess he goes on to say, Jenkins goes on to say that they got down to the 6, and what'd they call? I was getting into that. You know, they were bringing in the goal line set, the 2 big tight ends, the big bodies they handed to Foreman.
So nobody knew, right?
Yeah.
Not predictable at all.
No.
Yeah. Anyway.
Everybody in New Orleans, Louisiana, the world. You hear me? Bang, the world. Remember last week? Yeah. So anyway, yep. That's what Jenkins says. He says the Steelers' defense was so much in control of that game that the Vikings gained only 17 yards on that artificial turf, 12 fewer than Pittsburgh yielded to Oakland. So they weren't alone. This Pittsburgh defense was really good. Oh. I just named you all the draft picks.
Yeah. No, so you're saying 17 yards total in the game rushing?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I believe it.
Here's stat line for Mr. Tarkenton. 27 attempts, 11 completes, 102 yards. 3 passes were intercepted, 4 were deflected, and many were hurried.
Yeah.
So it sounds like they just couldn't protect him. And if we saw even Patrick Mahomes, we saw that a few years ago when Brady beat him. It wasn't really Brady. That Tampa Bay defense was – you know, they were running him laterally, side to side, all up and down that field, and he did his best. But when it's hard to play quarterback when you have that much pressure, seems impossible.
Well, it is, and I know he, in football QB terms, he was like 6'1" or whatever. So I know he wasn't exactly tall for a QB.
Mm-hmm.
But when you can telegraph what you're going to do, doesn't it make a very good defense really good? I mean, they just know they're going to tee off on them. And I just remember, as I was alluding to a few moments ago, we finally get a nice drive going right before half. And Fran throws right on the 1-yard line, 2-yard line, right to Gilliam, hits him in the hands. I think it bounces off his shoulder pad, up in the air, picked off. That's not Fran's fault. Fran does nothing wrong.
There was ever.
ever. But no, I mean, that was just classic freaking Vikings during that game. Again, give the Steelers their props, but we didn't do ourselves any favors.
Yeah, they turned out to be a decent ball club.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
Was that their first of 4? Was that the first?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was the first, but there were 4.
Yeah.
This kind of summarizes the offense. 2 passes, 1 play. It says, then there was the time Tarkenton threw 2 passes on the same play. This was another one of those marvelous interludes where Fran was running for his life and limb, looking for wide receiver who?
John Gilliam.
John Gilliam downfield, where he might be interfered with, which turned out to be Minnesota's best play all day.
Yeah.
And one might add, it's only hope. Tarkenton threw the ball. It was deflected by LC Greenwood right back to Tarkenton, who threw another pass. That one got completed to Gilliam, but of course you can't do that. I don't know if that was the first time that ever happened in a Super Bowl, or maybe the only time, but yeah, he did two passes, and that was their best play. So let's get some quotes. The aforementioned Jerry Burns, I guess he was the offensive coordinator.
He was.
He might need to go.
Yeah.
How do you like this analysis? When it came to the Vikes offense, where was the breakdown? Jerry Burns, they kicked the tar out of us. It's hard to say much else. You agree with that?
Oh, totally agree with it. But it's easier to kick the tar out of somebody when they know which play you're going to run, right?
Yeah. I'd like to present some evidence. You know, I'm wondering, like, is there a big strife between the offense and the defense? I'm wondering what's going to happen with Super Bowl hangover. I know all of those things didn't happen purely because they made their best team was next year. That's what Coach Grant said. And then they made the Super Bowl after that. So they're just, you got to hand it to them. They're staying unified. You know, they're in it together. Here's a quote that sort of impressed upon me what the spirit was in the locker room. The reporter was asking Paul Sutherland. You remember this gentleman?
Paul? Doug Sutherland?
It says Paul here.
Oh, I think it's Doug, but go ahead. Yep, okay,
I could have wrote it down wrong. Yeah. How did the Vikings get trapped on Rocky Blyer dashes through the
Rocky
middle?
Rocky Blyer. I do love that guy. yeah. How do you not? But.
Paul says, mostly it was me or Doug. We call those sucker plays. I got fooled on two or three times.
Yes.
I just put that in there because, like, accountability is a thing. And when the defense is being accountable, I feel like the offense could forgive them and they could work towards the next year. But I have that flip. The defense is just fine. It's the offense, you know what I mean? But it seems like Paul has – or Doug, Mr. Sutherland has a good attitude. And I just thought that was representative of what must be going on in that locker room. I have a feeling that those guys really stuck together because we've all seen the Super Bowl hangover. And I don't know.
Yeah.
It's the ultimate team game football, and you got to stick together. So Fran, you know, he had a good attitude as well, and it doesn't surprise me. Said, we had a wonderful year. There are plenty of teams that would like to have gotten here. Sometimes you lose. I had to learn to accept losing early in life. It goes with winning. Well, what do you think about that? Are you okay with that? Or do you want him to light a car on fire?
Well, no, I mean,
on Excelsior Avenue.
Fran is Fran, and he's very articulate,
probably
and very,
not an avenue.
Very intelligent, yeah. And he's, you know, post football career, hugely successful businessman. So it doesn't surprise me that he would say something like that. You know, what else are you going to say, right? I mean, it's a classy thing to say. I'm sure deep, you know, for me, I'm a little more. You never wonder what I'm thinking. So I don't. I'd make great sound bites if I were a pro athlete because. You know, I'm going to throw it out
you
there.
You are pretty, like, calm, cool, and collected. I haven't seen you lose it.
Oh, I can.
I'm sure you can.
But, you know, what else are you going to say? I mean, they got their asses kicked. And, I mean, there's just no – anytime they got any momentum, shoot themselves in the foot.
It's funny you say that because I have the last quote I have written down here was from Coach Bud on the outcome. He says, You were saying every time they got momentum, shoot themselves in the foot. So here's what Bud says. We couldn't sustain ourselves, and when they needed to, the Steelers did. They deserved to win the football game. It was what you would call a pretty bad football game, but they won it, and I'm sure it looks great. It looks like the greatest football game in the world to them. I just regret that it didn't look that way to us.
Yeah. Whether I, you know, even if it wasn't the Vikings, it was an ugly game. It just feet, you know, people falling, slipping. The turf was not in great condition. It was a sloppy, ugly game. Unfortunately, we lost. But I certainly wouldn't be riveted and on the edge of my seat watching that game because it was just an ugly game.
Yeah.
But they out-uglied us, plain and simple, you know.
Yeah, it just seems like whatever was going on at the line of scrimmage, Pittsburgh was moving the defensive line as good as those guys were.
Oh my gosh.
Franco Harris set a record. and they just ball controlled you to death. And those numbers from Fran were ugly. And
they were.
Yeah, 102 yards or whatever it was. That's pretty rough. Well, you know, there's always next year, and we'll be back next year. Next year to talk about, you know, we mentioned it earlier, that we're going to find out where the term Hail Mary came from. Yeah. And little tease, it's not great for Minnesota fans.
No, it's not. One
anecdote.
The most entertaining part of that Super Bowl, do you remember Dandy Don Meredith?
Yeah.
He was the color guy on the
Miami Dolphin, right? Don Meredith?
He was a QB for, I think they may have done the movie North Dallas 40. I think he was a QB for the Cowboys. Anyway, rumor has it he was hammered most of the time when he was on
TV.
Yeah. So legendary Kirk Gowdy was the play-by-play guy.
Kirk Gowdy. Yeah.
Yeah, and Dandy Don. That was although at the time I was so, every time Don Meredith would say something, I'm just like spewing because, you know, he's making these stupid jokes. I'm like, no, it's not the time to make jokes.
Yeah. The announcers can definitely get on your nerves. I remember when I was a kid, Chick Hearn used to because Chick Hearn used to go over the top to prove that he wasn't like a Lakers homer.
Yeah.
And so he would like pick apart Magic or whatever. And yeah, I'd had enough of him.
Yeah.
And that's a guy that was, you know, on the Lakers side.
Right.
Yeah.
The miniseries Winning Time, if you haven't seen it, Chick Hearn's in that.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Entertaining. The HBO Max thing. Yeah. 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 They kind of do Jerry West dirty on that show, I hear.
They do. And Jerry Buss. But he was dirty.
All right. That was 1974-75 season. Mike, let's go to the music corner. Like I said earlier, I had a hard time figuring out what to pick. I went through not just the top 10, but the whole top 100 of that year. You can tell something's changing. It's not like the previous years, like when we read off the top 10 records of 69-70. That was incredible.
Yeah.
And I think disco's coming. But I don't know. This is one of my favorite artists, and I use the word artist purposely because this man truly was an artist. His name's David Bowie. This guy preceded Madonna. He was able to reinvent himself in not a goofy or a cheesy way, in a real genuine way. When he was Ziggy Stardust, you believed he was living that character. Mm-hmm. It was like performance art. Then he was the Thin White Duke. And then he was sort of the fame years in the 80s, kind of making fun of all the excess and Wall Street. And then he just kept on getting better. And he was a terrific actor. He was in, I don't know, you probably haven't seen it. There's a show called Extras by Ricky Gervais. He was in. You can find the clip on YouTube. He's really good in that. And he was just an artist. He just really committed to his art form, and he wrote some songs that will live as long as we're listening to music, as long as we're listening to rock and roll music. There'll be a place for David Bowie.
Yeah, I like this song,
Rebel Rebel.
Yeah,
you ever listen to the lyrics carefully?
No.
Yeah. It's interesting. All right, everybody. Next week, Hail Mary. You're going to learn what that's all about.
Hail Mary.
And I
want to
thank you if you've made it this far. Bless your heart. All right.
We'll see you next week.
See you. Bye.